Hi everyone, and welcome to the Brexit Podcast. We've already done two episodes kind of like this, in which I talk about my five big talking points about Brexit and things we've learned from doing the podcast thus far, and you've also heard Warren share his 5 points. So today, we have the one and only Tim Hemming on to share his unique point of view on the topic. How are you feeling, Tim?
Really on the spot, yeah. Last and by all means least.
By no means least. It is just before Christmas and we have a bit of champagne, so this should be a fun one. And with that, we should probably jump straight into it, Tim. What is your first Brexit takeaway?
My first Brexit takeaway from all the weeks that we've been doing the Brexit podcast so far. Episodes, oh God, we must be nearly up to 30 now.
It is, yeah, nearly 30.
Yeah, it's gone really fast. So with all that change and all of those things have happening, my first one is intransigence.
Okay, well, do explain what intransigence means.
Okay, well, this is people's unwillingness to change, which I think out of all the discussions that we've had so far and as the narrative has weaved its way over these many months and we've learnt more about the situation with the British economy, where we're heading, what the government's plans are or not, I think all that really has happened is everybody's become more entrenched in their position. I mean, have you spoke to anybody who has changed their mind since the EU referendum?
No, I don't think I have. But I think there is, as much as the Brexit referendum and the US election for that matter, because I feel like those are often mentioned in the same breath now, as much as they have polarized opinions, I think to some people it has also underlined the importance of taking a step towards people that we disagree with to have a better outcome at the end of it, if that makes sense. I think I've heard this a lot more coming from America than from England, but I think in the wake of the US election, a lot of people have said that rather than trying to vilify, for example, Trump supporters, they're now making an active effort to understand where they were coming from. So I do think both sides.
I do take that on America. It's said that there's a period of healing after battle has commenced for elections, and then everybody then starts to pull together because they know the priority is, you know, the country moving forward. I'm not sure that's happened though with Brexit at all. Yeah. I think it's happened with a minority of people, but I certainly think that people are polarized and as polarized as they've ever been. And also,
why do you think that is? Why is England
because
so different?
I think people look to sources that just cement their views, and I think it's a deeper psychological issue to all of this, and the fact that we have these deep-seated beliefs.
But why does America have that instinct to pull together, and we have that instinct to stay separated? If that's what you think it is.
The situation with America is now very clear that Donald Trump is going to be the president of that country, so they have no choice.
Okay.
The situation with the UK is not clear currently.
That is fair enough. Yeah.
You know, okay. What form Brexit's going to take, whether it's going to be hard, soft, or somewhere in the middle, and what's particularly going to happen with the single market, for example, the movement.
And the High Court case with Article 50 going through Parliament and things like that, so that's still out there. Okay, fair enough.
So I think people are still, and maybe this is part of it, that people are not willing to move because they still think they've got something to fight for.
Mm. Do you think that's an issue? Would you rather there?
I think it's an issue because I think I don't think it's particularly progressive, and we're going to get onto I'm going to get onto another point later on, where we talk a little bit about attitudes towards Brexit and how we should move forward as a country. So I won't go too much into that now. But I think the constant antagonisement from one side to the other doesn't help.
Definitely.
Okay. Happy Christmas cheer.
Woo! Okay, second
so,
point.
So, next one. It's not quite so much cracker jokes, but it is humour. And just looking at what's been happening in world politics in 2016 and just wondering whether this is a grounds for some comedy to come out of it. And I think it's a funny one. I went to see Jonathan Pye in stand-up, and he was very, very, very good at what
he does.
Do
you want to explain who he is, maybe?
Jonathan Pye is this kind of spoof news reporter who is an incredibly angry man. He is probably one of the most angriest men on the planet, and he puts so much fire and vitriol into his act. And it kind of parodies what's happening with the current political climate, the government, all the decisions that are making. He has a go at the left, he has a go at the right, he has a go at the centre, and he's just bang, 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 bang. He's on it all the time. But so he's very, very funny, but I'm not sure that outside of that, and I look at shows like, you know, Have I Got News For You, or I look at like The Thick of It Now, and you think, actually, it's really close to reality.
I don't know any of those shows. I don't know if that's because I'm German or because I'm too young to know those shows. But what I find quite interesting is that I'm not American, for the record, but I watch a lot of American like political comedy programs. So I watch a lot of The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, or Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, or Steve Colbert's show.
Yeah.
And I'm curious... I haven't seen an English equivalent of that. Is that because there is none, or because I'm uninformed?
I don't know. I watch very little TV these days, so I'm probably...
Well, I don't watch it on TV. I watch it on my laptop, because I'm a millennial. I feel like we should have a jingle for whenever Jen mentions the words, because I'm a millennial.
Yes, we... My head ring a bell, like Pavlov's dogs or something. My question really is, has this whole situation become so bizarre and so farcical that it's impossible to satire it anymore?
No, I don't think that's true. I think if it's not impossible to satire, if anything, I think that kind of thing thrives in these circumstances, because The Daily Show first thrived and while George W. Bush was president, while he basically, well, arguably fucked up that country. So Jon Stewart had a lot of fodder to work with. And that's why The Daily Show became so great, because he had this great antagonist to work against. And I think that's going to happen with Brexit now.
Yeah, I don't. I remember Peter Kay doing something about spoofing The X Factor years ago. And The X Factor is so far beyond ridiculous anyway. It kind of just... You can't really make a joke on this. Real life is a lot funnier. Let's move on. To point number three.
Can you tell that Tim's a journalist? He's very succinct. He's like, this is it, and we're done, and we're moving on to the next point.
Yes, point three.
Yes, continue. Point three.
Point three is Ireland and the situation in Ireland, and what could potentially happen with Brexit and Northern Ireland coming out of the European Union, and the worrisome nature, I suppose, of how, in the words of Conor Devine, who was our guest on episode, I did dig this out, but it now escapes me. Anyway, look up Conor Devine's episode about myself and Warren interviewed him.
As you can tell, we're very well prepared on the Brexit podcast.
Conor was saying how it could set the peace process back years. And it was he's from Belfast, very real concern for him, because you have to start putting up a hard border. Just something that I think really wasn't on the radar over here. When a lot of people voted, but yeah. A very serious issue.
I find that really interesting coming from Berlin, because people sort of talk about the wall, obviously the Berlin Wall, as if it happened ages ago.
There are so many walls something... now. You have to qualify your walls in 2016. Is that a damning indictment on society that we have to, when we talk about a wall, we have to
specify
which wall?
The Great Wall of China. No, okay, the Berlin Wall. People talk about the wall as if it happened ages ago and as if it would never happen again. And I think people didn't consider that a wall within one country, that country being Ireland, could be a thing again. I think everyone sort of saw that as really removed from reality. But I mean, obviously there wouldn't be such an ideological difference maybe between the North of Ireland and Ireland itself, the Republic of Ireland, but it's still such a strange concept that might still exist in the modern Western world. I don't know if it would be in the form of a wall, but it would certainly be...
Whatever it is, it's going to be... It can only inflame the situation. It can't be a good thing, putting up barriers like that. I had a friend went to Israel recently and took some pictures of the wall around Palestine, and it's pretty striking stuff.
Yeah, my friend took one. She was in the demilitarized zone in Korea, on the border to North Korea, and she took some photos. It was just strange, that kind of thing. I've not Although I recently was in France and I traveled back to England, and on the way to France there was hardly any border control. Everything was okay. But as soon as we went from France back to England, we had to go through two separate border controls. Our passports were checked super rigorously, and it was just, yeah, I don't know, it feels like it's already kind of an action, but
It's quite, and I think that's it, isn't it? It's that oppressive atmosphere that then plays into other things. The air of fear and the air of uncertainty. So go back and have a listen to Connor's episode. Quite what will happen. He talks of the money that they receive from the European Union, as they call it peace money over there, for Northern Ireland, which is an area that needs huge amounts of regeneration. So it will need a lot of government support when we leave the European Union.
So what do we know about how certain it is that that wall, or that hard border, might or might not be instated? Does it depend on whether we keep freedom of movement? And if we do, then there wouldn't be a necessity for a hard border. But if we don't keep freedom of movement, there would probably be a hard border. Is that how it would work? Or do you know anything about that?
Yeah, it has to, essentially, that has to be how it works, doesn't
Yeah, I suppose inevitably. So that's good. That's cheery news. It all comes back to that soft Brexit, hard Brexit thing, doesn't it? About staying in the single market or not staying in the single market. I feel like that's the... Is that the crux of it? That's what it seems like to me. Or that's at least what the media, all the media ever talks about, because it's all about economics. So it's like, do we stay or do we leave the single market?
I think the single market's going to be huge, isn't it? And then also the free movement of people is just...
That's part of it, though.
Yeah, it's part of one of the things. But within that, the free movement of people is such an emotive thing, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, which I know Robin...
Yeah, we had someone on from the New Europeans who talked about this, which I also found really interesting. It's really interesting to get a perspective of people who've lived here for years but who are not citizens, and to see how they would be affected by this kind of thing. It's quite... I don't know, we used the word... I used the word deportation in the tweet because that's a phrasing I had picked up from The Guardian, and I got a bit of backlash from that because people thought it was inflammatory. But I think to a lot of people, maybe it would feel that way, as if they were deported.
Because what was the backlash?
It was the episode we did with Marie Love from the New Europeans, and I quoted an article by The Guardian which stated that up to 1 million European citizens in the UK might be deported as a result of Brexit if we don't keep the free movement of people. And someone answered on Twitter and said that they thought it was inflammatory and that there was not going to be such a thing as deportations, which there might not be sort of literally people running into your house and forcefully evicting you or something like that. But I think...
If no agreement is reached between May and other European leaders, it could definitely result in people being forced to leave the country, not by actual force, but, you know, by necessity.
Moving on to point four, which is hand-wringing. So this is everybody being up in arms about everything and nobody looking at any positives in any situation.
So, what are the positives at the moment, though?
There are always positives, aren't there?
Okay, what are they?
That's a good question. What are the positives? Well, exports are a bit cheaper.
True.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, we now also, we realise that our economy needs to be more sustainable moving forward. So, if we look at talk about the rural economy, then we know that we need to be looking to, like, feed ourselves as we go forward, because we're cut off from everybody else. So I think there's a focus in within that. There's a sense that we need to be, shaped up and fit for business a little bit.
Okay.
But even if there aren't that many positives, dwelling on the negatives
isn't
going to help anything.
Yeah,
we've had some guests on, and the ones that leave you after the interview with a bit more of a feel good factor were, and then you can argue that these people, haven't got to worry because they've already got enough money, so it's not a problem. But when we had Rob Watts on, talking about the super rich. Rob compiles the Sunday Times rich list.
Well, it's great to know that the super rich don't have to worry about Brexit. What a surprise.
Yeah, but I think more to the point was the attitude, really, that if it potentially was going to be, because look, whatever situation you're in, whether you've got millions or whether you've got, you know, whatever, just a few pennies, then something changes in the country, the economy, then that affects you, and then you deal with it, and it's all relative, right? So mm-hmm. that could be a negative or a positive for you, you know, aside from the, you know, number amount of total amount. Okay, does that make some sort yeah. of sense? So it's his feeling was that they sort of had an attitude where they can try to make things work for them, so they can see the opportunities within that. And likewise with the business community, I think we had Jonathan Franks on, who was talking about, you know, kind of the optimism that they still potentially have, but they did want to be more involved with the process with government moving forward.
Yeah.
To help inform and make some of those decisions. And when we had the guys on from the triathlon industry as well, they were, you know, generally quite bullish about things. So I think that attitude, I mean, attitude is everything, isn't it? I think that might even be the title of Conor Devine's book. Mm. And he was a very, although he was speaking about his fears for Ireland, he was a really positive guy.
Mm. I think I'm kind of hoping as well that because young people so overwhelmingly voted
to remain.
That they might, this could go both ways. I'm hoping that they would feel more inclined to get involved in the political process, not just in elections, but to get involved in communities and things like that. I think it could also go in the opposite direction of saying they came out and they did vote. I don't know the percentage for the referendum, how many young people voted, but some certainly did come out and vote. I'm worried that those might now feel like their vote doesn't matter anyway, because older, more conservative people would outvote them anyway.
I don't know really sure whether that... I think it will be more of a spur. But also with that as well, I think it's just in terms of like social activism and things. I think what has actually happened, and all the information, all the news that comes out, when we hear things about the likes of Aleppo in Syria, and when we hear about the refugee crisis, I think individuals have a bit more fire in their belly at times to actually go out and do something on a more of a micro level. So I think you're seeing more people helping one another now as a response to this. It's kind of like we're in a bad situation, so they roll up their sleeves and actually do something to help. I do feel that is a little bit of, there is a little bit of a sense of that vibe creeping in, which has got to be a good thing.
I definitely think that is one reaction to that, but I wouldn't disregard the fact that public opinion also often swings in the other direction. Like, as a result of terror attacks, for example, you would hope that people would sort of pull together and say, we are not opposed to Islam, but we are opposed to extremists and terrorists. But I think a lot of times it swings into Islamophobia or a fear of people who are different than us, people who wear turbans or have beards and darker skin. And I think it can veer into both the extremely positive of pulling together and the extremely negative. And I think to solely say that you think it's going to all turn out well is kind of inviting disaster. That might sound quite catastrophic, but I just think we shouldn't be complacent, definitely. I read an article recently where someone differentiated between complacent optimism and active optimism, and I think that's a really good distinction, because if you're complacently optimistic, you just think everything's going to be okay, everyone's pulling together, there's nothing to do. But if you're actively optimistic, it means you're doing something about it and you're recognizing that there's still a threat to that positivity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's I quite like that idea.
So do something about it, people.
Yeah. Wow, look at us.
Let's just sit here and chat about it. Let's just chatter on
about it. It's doing something, is it not? I'd like to think we are.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's true. Let us know on Twitter. No, don't. Facebook, please don't.
Or Instagram.
Don't let us know.
And my final point, education. education, education. Tony Blair speech 2001. It's all about education.
Okay.
So I think the episodes that I like, actually, that we do, we've done a couple with Robin Munro, episode 8 and episode 26, where she talked about the confounding Great Repeal Bill. And also she came back in and talked about some of the legal challenges to Brexit. And we also did one with Raoul Ruparel, who talked about Article 50 and what that was all about. I think that's all useful stuff. Because it's kind of complicated what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And educating ourselves around that has only got to be a good thing. Do you agree? Do you concur?
That education can only be a good thing.
Yes.
I don't think anyone would disagree with that, would they? That would be... Would someone disagree that education is important?
I don't think so. I think... Do you think that education through this podcast is a good thing for us to be doing, or do you think we should?
I definitely think so. I think we received a comment from someone on the website, which I was really happy with, because our whole aim with this was always to be a lot less partisan than a lot of other news outlets and to show people from both sides and to let people make up their own mind rather than telling them what to think and not being overly positive or overly negative.
Do you think you've been able to do that, Jess?
Well, the commenter said that we have. I would like to think that we're well on the way to being that. I think I think it's very clear from the way I phrase things on the podcast that I have a political opinion. But I think it's more important to say that that is my opinion and that I am open to be proved wrong and to be honest about the fact that I'm speaking from a standpoint rather than pretending to be sort of unbiased, because no one can be unbiased. It's just not a thing. And me pretending to be unbiased, I think, would be a lot less fair to people than openly admitting the standpoint that I'm coming from. I'd like to think that in that way, we have gone a good way to achieving that. What do you think?
I like to see that you're not intransigent. And I think we should keep doing more of those type of episodes where we can help explain things as they go on.
Definitely.
So that should be a positive. And yeah, and I think, so I've done 5.
Tim has an extra one because Tim always has to have his own special way for things.
No, my only other thought was just in terms of who we value and who we value in terms of the government and people that make the decisions. It feels like that we're quite a fickle nation that, you know, if you looked at the parties at the moment, whoever's in power or whoever is challenging them, so the Tories or Labour Party, their hand seems to weaken all the time. I don't know if that's what you're feeling as well, but certainly with mine, I don't get the sense that they're ever instilling much confidence in the public. And whereas somebody like the Lib Dems, who are pretty much completely almost forgotten about, it almost seems like their position is strengthened because of this, because people are then going to come around and like seek more of an alternative.
Well, I can't vote here, unfortunately, and I don't know who I would vote for, to be honest. I think it would probably be Labour, or Greens, I suppose, but then Greens are never actually going to have or at least not in the next couple of years, are going to have a massive position, I think.
It's a couple
or
a of massive role. Centuries.
Even though I think their points are very valid, I don't think they're necessarily resonating, obviously, with a large number of Brits, so...
No, and they're going to resonate less as well, aren't they?
Which is always great, because what we need right now is less of a focus on climate change and sustainability. That is what we need going forward.
Well,
that was sarcasm, for the record. Don't, misunderstand, please. That was sarcasm.
Well, yeah, but as the economy shrinks, that tends to be what happens.
How have we managed to end this on a pessimistic note again? It's just, I thought we were going positive there, but... So your point is we are moving towards our inevitable decay. Is that the point?
I think my point is that we don't... is there anything they say about British? We build them up, build people up, and then like to shoot them down pretty quickly. It would be nice if we had a leader and an arrowhead that we were actually all behind and all pulling in the same direction.
Has there ever been a leader like that, though? A non-authoritarian leader, I mean. A democratic leader that everyone's been behind.
Everybody. I don't know. I mean, when Tony Blair was incredibly popular when he first came into power.
Is that a good thing, though? That kind of blind sort of supporting of a guy? Because it switched with that as well, didn't it?
Yeah, well, it always seems to switch, and history seems to judge people differently from how they were at the time.
So I don't think that... Because you can put things into context when it's past, so you can see things within their context rather than while you're living it, it's hard to see connections between things and the consequences of decisions. So I think, I don't know, I quite like the idea that there's no such thing as one leader that everyone can rally behind, because that would just mean that everyone's been brainwashed to think the same thing.
Yeah, of course, I understand that. It's that kind of whole air of negativity that just drags everybody back down again.
Just the fact that you don't think any of the parties at the moment have a convincing leader that even a majority of people could rally behind.
Well, I think it's difficult. Yeah, I mean, there's a questionable whether Theresa May's even got a mandate to be in charge of the country.
Well, okay, this is getting... Yeah, I mean, that is fair enough, yeah. I don't know whether she wanted to have a snap election to sort of... bolster that mandate. I don't think she will do.
I don't think the country could have taken any more voting.
Oh, Jesus Christ. yeah, maybe not. I don't know. I think, unless you have another point to add, maybe we should leave it here.
Yep. Let's wish you all a...
Oh, yeah, this is going to air after Christmas, but it's Christmas first. So, Merry Christmas, and happy thank you for
New
listening.
Year.
Oh, Happy New Year. Oh, yeah, it's going to be happy. So, yeah, have a good New Year, and... we will bring you a lot more amazing episodes, so please do tune in for them. And I'm sure if you listen to us consistently, you will have an amazing year. And you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul. And our theme song is...
Cool Vibes.
By...
Kevin MacLeod.
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 I'm never going to live this time. Okay, bye everyone.